Welcome to the College Football Bros, the podcast featuring Chuck Amato this week. And now, here are your hosts, Michael, Ryan, and Trey Newman.
Welcome to the College Football Bros podcast. I am Michael Newman, and I'm joined by my brother Ryan, who thinks this podcast will last how long?
Oh, give or take an hour and 3 minutes.
Hour and 3 minutes. All right. I'm also joined by my brother Trey, who is taking the over or under on that.
$1. $1.
Oh, he's okay.
we're going prices right here, are we?
No, it doesn't really apply there. I'm going to go under.
Okay. All right. I'm taking the over on that. We've got a lot to cover this episode, and I'm going to start speaking slower.
Yeah, okay.
So two things we have to get to before we start. Well, actually, Ryan, I think the audience has already heard. You're a little bit under the weather.
Yeah, if you guys can't tell already, I'm losing my voice. I don't feel nearly as bad as I sound, though, so that's the positive thing.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, thank you for toughing it out.
He's playing hurt.
I'm playing hurt, man. I'm fighting through.
All right. Well, first off, we have a new 5-star review. And Ryan, yeah. Just to give your voice a little exercise here, why don't you read that review for us?
Yeah. Thanks. So it's from DLloyd69, who's a loyal listener for us and called us goofballs to start, which fair enough. So he said, guys have a great knowledge of the game and the players always find a way to make you laugh. Also very good at fan feedback. And one day I'm going to get all the bros to give me go dogs or go give me big go dogs in Athens that game. So
nice. All right. Trey, you've actually been to a game at Georgia. You
That's
talk
right.
about it all the time.
Yeah.
I'm not afraid to talk about it, but Athens was a fun place.
But no, we definitely someday we get this podcast big enough where we've got thousands of fans in every city. We got to go hit up some games.
Yeah, go on the road.
Great fight song they have there, right, Trey?
Absolutely.
I actually learned that Glory Glory is not their official fight song.
We brought that up, but you know what? Whatever.
All right, close enough.
Close enough.
Okay, another thing we got to get to before we start is the Yahoo College Football Pick'em League. This is the last week, and we've got a tie at the top right now between Rick Saban and Stone Cold Drew Locks, War Eagle one game back, Levi Webb two games back, and Dave from San Diego three games behind. So it's anybody's pool right now.
It was nice of Rick Saban to kind of let the pack catch up a little bit.
he missed a week. He got zero wins. Still tied for first place, but
that's crazy.
I didn't think of it until this week. What are we going to do if someone ties? If there's a tie at the top, who wins the prizes?
The grand prize. Ooh, that's a good question.
Because I'm the commissioner, and I looked at the rules, and there doesn't appear to be a tiebreaker.
Well, we got to do some future game or bet or something. I know it's championship week, so we got Army Navy the week after. What if we did the they'd have to pick the total points scored in that game, and the closest two would get the prize.
Okay. I like that. I was thinking more maybe somebody leaves us a 5-star review and lets us know, but that was very self-serving and pretty shameless. So I like your idea better. Price is Right rules or just closest to?
I don't know.
Closest to.
Closest to.
All right.
I don't like Price is Right rules.
If there's a tie, we will make sure whoever's tied for first, make sure you tweet us or email us with your total points scored prediction for Army Navy. Okay, time to recap week 13, and we'll start with Oklahoma winning a shootout, surprise, surprise, at West Virginia, 59-56 to reach the Big 12 championship and, of course, stay alive in the playoff hunt. So, Ryan, what'd you see here?
Yeah, this game was insane. Nearly 1,400 yards of total offense, but you know, I feel bad for Will Grier and West Virginia. They very easily could have won this game, and there were a couple of calls, you know, by the refs that took points off the board that Dana Holgorsen certainly wasn't happy about. The first one was that pass interference on David Sills, but that was a no-brainer to me. That one was blatant. He just ran right into the guy, so that was an obvious one.
Yeah.
But the real questionable one was the fourth quarter one where they called the personal foul on the receiver blocking too far out of bounds. That one was a little dicey, and two plays later, it led to that OU touchdown on a fumble by Will Grier. So that was a costly, costly penalty. But, you know, stuff happens in games like this, and OU just always finds ways to win. That's why they're the top dog in the Big 12. So they just, it's just what they do.
That, I mean, I would have liked to have seen the refs hold the flag in the pocket on that guy blocking out of bounds, but it was, what was that guy doing? I mean, he was blocking him beyond out of bounds, like into the stands. So that was a little bizarre. But and you
it's
know,
like that
Ryan,
one
you
movie.
Met,
what was the Blind Side?
Does he do that in the Blind
Side? Oh yeah, yeah.
Remember the high school film of him like blocking him into the bus or whatever, or just way off the field?
Yeah, right.
I want him bad.
Jesus.
Oh, that's the greatest line in movie history. That was Philip Fulmer from the Blind Side. Perfect impression by Ryan. I have tried to find that clip on YouTube, and I can't find it. I know it's in the movie, but if someone finds Philip Fulmer saying, I want him bad, send me that video.
That's classic.
But the ironic thing, though, about this game was that it was pretty much won by that defensive play, with the complete lack of defense, they had the strip sack of Grier, and they went up 10 in the fourth quarter, and that pretty much sealed it for OU. And I'm not going to try and sound like an old timer and a purist, because I'd much rather watch a game like this than a 6-3 struggle. But this defense of Oklahoma, it's beyond painful to watch, and they're almost, you know, they're still really good, but they're almost wasting back-to-back years of historic offenses.
Yeah, they are. But I think this game was kind of the blueprint for how that defense can actually do something. I mean, they got two touchdowns, so.
Yeah, I mean, if they get two touchdowns, OU's not going to lose any games.
No. And that's kind of what they need to do. Not score touchdowns. Obviously, that's easier said than done. But they just need to, I think, go all out for turnovers. Kind of like Texas Tech's defense last year. They weren't very good, but they got a ton of turnovers. And, you know, maybe a lot of that was luck, or maybe that's just something they're targeting, but they don't seem to stop anybody from moving down the field. So just try and go for those strip sacks, try and go for any turnover you can get. But one thing I loved in this game was the decision by Lincoln Riley to go for it on fourth down at the end of the game. They were up by 3. They had a 4th and 5 with about 2.5 minutes left. They were at the 40 at West Virginia's 40. So if you get that first down, it's pretty much game over. Not quite, but pretty much. And then even if you don't, so what? You gave West Virginia a little bit better field position. They were probably just going to march down the field anyway. So
yeah.
I thought that was...
You have to be aggressive there, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, do you want your offense to try and win you the game or your defense? Answer the question. It was not rhetorical.
Yeah, easy choice. That's
Yeah, the offense. All right. Next game was actually at the exact same time. I had picture in picture going. Felt like I was in the 90s. When's the last time you guys used picture in picture?
I'd been a while.
I just
Mike.
Set up two TVs, but yeah, I hear you.
Yeah.
I only had one TV, solution. But it worked out perfect. I mean, you get a 55 inch with the picture in picture. Actually, I think it was a 65 inch. So worked out.
Oh, not to brag.
Wow.
But Washington, I'm talking about. I don't know if I mentioned the game I'm talking about. Washington got the win in the snow at Washington State, 28-15. So they reached the Pac-12 championship. What'd you see here, Trey?
Yeah, I mean, with the massive snowfall, this game set up perfectly for a team like Washington. They had a superior defense and an offense that doesn't solely rely on the pass, much like Wazoo's pretty much does. Gaskin played huge in this one. He rushed for 170 and 3 scores. But it was an ugly game overall to watch, just obviously because of weather, but they each had 3 turnovers. I really wish this game was played in a more normal environment, as it really took away from some of the luster in this one for me. It was a good win for UW to go to the Pac-12 title, but it just took away a little bit from the game.
Yeah, I mean, clearly that's the story from this one, that Wazoo's offense is not suited for that, but that's sort of the problem, or a problem if you're Wazoo. Running that offense in Pullman late in the season, you might have to play in a game like this, so... that's just one of the drawbacks. But, you know, it was an amazing season from the Cougs, obviously, but kind of like Michigan, which we'll get to, it might not feel like it for the fans, because it once again ends with you losing easily to your biggest rival that pretty much owns you recently. So that's kind of too bad for those fans. But you mentioned Myles Gaskin. He reached 1,000 yards on the season rushing. He is now the only player in Pac-12 history to rush for 1,000 yards four times.
Wow.
Yeah.
He's had a heck of a career there. That's crazy.
It is, yeah. JT Barrett actually did it seven times.
Oh,
but
wow.
Yeah.
That's the Big Ten.
Yeah, yeah, I feel bad for Cougs fans. It's unfortunate that this kind of happened that way. But Chris Peterson, he just owns Wazoo. He owns Mike Leach.
He does. You know,
this is what, six wins in a row now, I think, for UW over Wazoo. I don't think Wazoo's won the Apple Cup since 2012. So it's been rough. It's been a rough stretch for them. But I mean, it's still a great season, 10-2. Nobody thought they'd do that.
No way. Can I tell you guys a secret? Again, I need you to promise not to tell anybody else.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Okay. So when they came back from commercial and they first had the yard lines showing up via the graphics, I thought that they had just plowed the field and uncovered the yardage lines.
Wow.
For a good, I would say, 5 seconds. I was like, wow. Oh, they plowed the field. That was pretty quick.
Yeah, well.
It was just the numbers.
It's pretty cool technology.
It was. Did you like that? Would you rather have the field just covered in snow? Or
no, I liked it. I mean, because I had no idea. It was really nice to have.
I don't know. I kind of would like to have it not be there, so you know what that players are actually seeing and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
I don't know.
All right. I kind of got away with my stupidity there pretty nicely.
Yeah.
We didn't dwell on that too much.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll let you slide, Mike.
Okay. Next game is Michigan getting blown out at Ohio State, 62-39. And I'll get to Michigan in a second, but I think my view of this game is mostly about Ohio State. They put together their best game of the year. I don't know why it came here. I guess it was just they needed the motivation of going up against a great team like Michigan. But the defense finally, especially in that first half, looked like closer to at least what you would expect out of the Buckeye defense. I know they gave up some touchdowns late, but that was mostly garbage time. But as for Michigan, what happened to their defense in this one? They'd given up 7 touchdown passes on the season. They gave up 6 in this game. I mean, I wasn't too surprised to see the offense struggle, but to see the defense just lay a complete egg was shocking to me. And the biggest story here is, of course, Harbaugh losing yet again to Ohio State, but
still a great coach. Still a great coach.
He's still a great coach. I think it's stupid to judge any coach by one game every year. And 3 of Harbaugh's 4 years now have still been very good, especially given what he inherited. This is still a great year, just because I know it is a little disappointing if you're a Michigan fan, and I would be disappointed if I was a Michigan fan. But you went 10-2, and you lost at Notre Dame, who's going to make the playoff in a close one. And yeah, you kind of got blown out at Ohio State, who might make the playoff. But just because you lose big on the road to a team doesn't mean you're way worse than the team, or that team.
No, not at all.
Is like, look at Ohio State. They know that.
Yeah.
They lost by a big margin at Purdue. We're not saying that Ohio State is owned by Purdue. It just, you know, it just happened.
No, yeah. I mean, it's still a good year for Michigan. They're going to make a New Year's Six bowl. It's, you know, they had a great year, but yeah, it's unfortunate that it kind of comes up like this at Ohio State. But you mentioned the defense. It's just, I don't know, a few weeks can make such a big difference in college football. I mean, a few weeks ago, the Buckeyes were kind of struggling offensively against teams like Nebraska. Nebraska was kind of able to hold them in check for quite a bit of that game. And then Michigan State, they couldn't do anything. I know it was different weather situation, but still, they were struggling and they couldn't run the ball at all. And then against the best defense they faced, they're just lights out. So I don't know. It's just week to week. You never know what's going to happen. And they just played on a completely different level, but we'll see if they can do it again, because they certainly made a statement though for the playoff.
Yeah. Oh, they definitely did. But Michigan got exposed. I mean, we'd been kind of saying it all year. At least I feel like I know I was saying it this year. Like when Michigan really needed a drive, when you needed to rely on their offense, like, I wasn't fully in love with them. I'm not trying to be hindsight's 2020, because I didn't see this happening in the least bit.
No, and I said that, before in my preview last week, just to, you're tooting your horn a little bit. I'll have to toot my own horn. it was hard to be super confident in that offense.
Yeah, because, I mean, this was an Ohio State team getting shredded left and right, so you thought, okay, how could Michigan still not be able to run the ball? But they were pretty anemic, and they weren't very creative. Harbaugh's stubbornness, and a lot of Michigan fans are pointing this out, his stubbornness with running a kind of a vanilla smash-mouth tight end fullback dive in between the tackles, it didn't work in this one game.
Are you slandering Ben Mason? You don't want any fullback dives anymore, Trey?
No, I love it. I'm just saying the lack of creativity compared to like what Maryland was doing to him the week before. And but yeah, Michigan, they bookend their season with some ugly losses against their biggest rivals. So it's I understand Michigan fans' point of view right now, but you know, still a solid year.
Okay, last game, Texas A&M beat LSU 74-72 in 7 overtimes on Saturday night. It's the highest scoring game in FBS history.
It's crazy.
Ryan, did you watch this one?
I did. Well, I didn't watch the entire game, but I certainly watched the fourth quarter and overtimes. It was nuts. It was crazy. And it's kind of funny though, because I felt like both defenses played pretty well throughout the whole game. There wasn't a bunch of glaring mistakes being made or offenses weren't dominating. So it's just kind of funny that this game is the most points scored ever in an FBS game, and it wasn't like crazy offensive performance, but just a super fun game to watch. But Kendrick Rogers in overtime for Texas A&M, where'd he come from? I mean, that he was awesome.
Yeah.
He was just making huge catches. I looked at his stats for the year, and it was very pedestrian. So coming out party for him. I know it's a tough loss for Coach Orgeron and LSU, but I mean, a great year for them, and they still have a decent chance of making a New Year's Six, right? So I think they're going to make it now.
They're in the conversation.
Yeah.
But it is crazy. I mean, so many things had to go right for A&M. I mean, Mond's knee being down at the end of regulation. Then after that, it was still a 4th and 18. Then a spike putting a second back on. A 20-yard touchdown as time expires. And then the scoring in each overtime matching each other. Yeah. Like, it's
the fumble in that first overtime that was called incomplete.
It was ridiculous. I mean, you couldn't. Unbelievable game. A crushing loss for LSU. But yeah, in the end, if you look at both these teams, I think they had successful years. And you look at LSU, their losses came against Florida, Bama, and A&M, and they also beat 4 top 25 teams. So I think it was a solid year.
It was. I would still, moving forward, be a little disappointed if I'm an LSU fan, or a little worried, I guess, that still kind of the same issues, a lackluster offense. I just don't think this LSU team feels any different than kind of the late Les Miles teams. But it's you laid it out nicely there though. It was a, I guess, impressive resume this year. But how about giving Coach O a Gatorade bath before the game
was
over?
Yeah, yeah. Oh.
You can't do that.
No.
Ouch.
No. Brutal.
But on the other side, what a year for Jimbo Fisher, going 8-4 in your first year when you have Alabama and Clemson on the schedule. That is a very good start. I'd be excited if I were an A&M fan.
No doubt. Yeah, that was a really impressive first year.
And they almost beat Clemson.
They did almost beat. Yeah, exactly. Okay, let's get to the rapid recaps. Ryan, why don't you get us started?
All right, I'll give it a shot here, guys.
Yeah.
All right, so my first game is the Egg Bowl, and this one was a snoozer. Mississippi State dominated Ole Miss. They won 35-3, kind of a boring game for Thanksgiving. But an 8-4 year for the Bulldogs is a good first year for Joe Moorhead. In my second game, I got Central Florida. They dominated South Florida 38-10, but of course the big news here is Mackenzie Milton suffered that devastating knee injury. It's horrible to watch. Apparently he already had surgery, and he's doing pretty well. So hopefully he makes a full recovery and is able to come back next year. My third game, is Texas at Kansas, and the Longhorns were able to hold off the Jayhawks 24-17. It wasn't pretty, but I don't think the Longhorns really care about that. They won the game. They go to the Big 12 title game, so that's all that really matters for them.
you okay?
Yeah, excuse me there. Trying to gather myself. All right, my fourth game is Florida at Florida State. And the Gators dominated 41-14. 9-3 in Dan Mullen's first year, ahead of schedule for sure. On the flip side, pretty much the opposite for Willie Taggart and FSU. They went 5-7, and that's their first losing season since 1976, when they were a preseason ranked top 25 this year. So that's not a good start there.
You remember last year when, obviously, FSU, they went 6-6, and then there was that post on Reddit about, wait a second, FSU might not be bowl eligible.
Oh, yeah, right.
And I think it had something to do with them playing an FCS team. I can't remember exactly the scenario. Oh, yeah. But it turned out they were bowl eligible. But anyway, so they're 5-7 now, right? Someone posted, one of the top threads on Reddit is, FSU might not be bowl eligible.
Hey, some 5-7 teams might make it again this year, right?
That's true.
I don't know if their APR is high enough, but we'll see. In my last game, we got the Iron Bowl. Unfortunately, this is a quick preview or a quick recap. Auburn, they were able to keep it competitive for the first half. They were only down 3 at halftime, but Bama poured it on in the second half and won 52-21. And that means Alabama's closest margin of victory in a game this season is 22 points against Texas A&M. That's just crazy how much they've dominated.
Trey, that was your bold prediction before the season.
Yeah, I said double digit, and then they took it even one step further and went over 20 points. I mean, that's crazy.
Three touchdowns.
Ryan, you did miss an opportunity in the Egg Bowl to say Mississippi State could have called it over easy.
Oh.
Ooh.
Ooh. Wow.
I like it. Yeah. I like it.
Trey's coming up with some decent ones here lately.
He's coming out of his shell.
Shell. That's right. Yeah. Ole Miss thinks Mississippi State is a bunch of deviled eggs.
No, you're just yoking.
I was scrambling for that last one.
Oh man. That's all I got.
How many egg puns can we do?
That's it. We're done.
All right.
Okay. I'm going to talk about games that had Group of Five conference championship implications. So we got the AAC. Memphis won a play-in game against a De'Arik Kingless Houston team, 52-31. So they'll be at UCF next week. In Conference USA, FIU, Butch Davis, blew their chance to go to the conference championship by losing to Marshall. And Middle Tennessee killed UAB 27-3. So now UAB has to play at Middle Tennessee again next week for all the marbles in that conference. In the MAC, Buffalo dominated Bowling Green to punch their ticket to play against Northern Illinois. In the Sun Belt, App State beat Troy 21-10 to win the East, and Louisiana survived a close game against ULM to win the West.
It's Louisiana Lafayette.
No, it's Louisiana.
Well, they just want to go by Louisiana now, don't they?
I know, but I don't like it.
Well, whatever.
Raging Cajuns. Monroe. So what? They're just better than Monroe?
I guess so. I guess they are. I mean, they beat them, so.
That's like, what was it? Southwest Missouri State dropped the Southwest, and now they're just Missouri State.
That was the best branding move ever. Southwest Missouri State sounds like a garbage team, but Missouri State's like, oh, yeah, not bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Southeast is wishing they did that.
Yeah. Finally, the Mountain West. Boise State won on the Smurf Turf against Utah State, 33-24. Great game from Alexander Madison, 200 rushing yards and 3 touchdowns. And he really carried them down the stretch of that one. So they will host Fresno State next week. And then I've got 4 more just kind of crazy rivalry games to go over. Virginia at Virginia Tech. The Hokies won in overtime to make it 15 straight wins over Virginia. That was a rough loss for the Cavs.
Just recover that fumble.
I know. That was crazy. At the end of the game, Virginia Tech, the game-tying touchdown, they fumbled in the end zone and then recovered it for the touchdown. BYU blew a 27-7 lead late in the fourth quarter in the Holy War against Utah to lose 35-27. Arizona also blew a big lead in the fourth quarter. They were up 40-21 and gave up 20 unanswered to lose by 1 against Arizona State. And then the last one I have here is NC State beating North Carolina 34-28 in overtime. And that game ended with a brawl.
It did. All right. The first game I'm going to touch on here is Notre Dame at SC. I was there to witness the Irish win 24-17 in what we all thought was Clay Helton's finale. We'll touch more on that later. But Notre Dame overcame an early 10-0 deficit to clinch their spot in the playoff. Wasn't overly impressive, but they did what they had to do behind some good play from Ian Book. Next game, South Carolina at Clemson. Clemson scored 14 points in each quarter to win 56-35. If there's a red flag for Clemson right now, it's that they allowed Jake Bentley to throw for 510 yards and five touchdowns. So they gave up 600 yards of offense, which is pretty surprising. Georgia Tech at Georgia. Georgia had no problem with the option offense of the Yellow Jackets. They held them to 219 yards and won 45-21, but it really wasn't even that close. Georgia appears to be peaking at the right time as they now get to face off with mighty Alabama in Atlanta. Next game, Kentucky at Louisville. This game symbolized each team's season as Kentucky throttled Louisville 56-10. Louisville didn't want to be there and essentially surrendered the Governor's Cup to the Wildcats. Terry Wilson, 17-23 for 261 and three touchdowns. They cap off a great year going 9-3. Finally, Syracuse at Boston College. The Orange won this one 42-21 to finish a solid year at 9-3. Eric Dungy was questionable going into this game, but not only did he play, but he played outstanding, threw for 362, and he accounted for all six touchdowns. Great year for Dino Babers Orange.
Kentucky and Syracuse winning big. What is this, basketball?
Hilarious.
Ryan, I have a fake laugh of yours on the soundboard that I cannot find right now, but
really,
maybe later in the episode I'll find it.
Okay, Mike.
Okay.
Great. Great.
It's time for our segments. Oh boy, I'm excited. First segment, I think our only segment, is the coaching carousel. First one is that Lynn Swann released a letter on Twitter explaining his decision to retain Clay Helton. And since I'm a USC fan, I'm going to give my thoughts first here. And you guys just have to tell me if I'm being an overdramatic fanboy or if you agree with me.
Will do, Mike.
Okay. All right. I'm going to take a sip of water before this one.
Yeah.
One of my 50 sips of water in the episode, but because I got a lot to say here. I got a lot
50,
to say.
50 different cups too.
That was from the sippy cup. All right. So first off, it's never a good sign when you're making a decision that you have to write a letter to the fans.
Yeah.
Basically saying, I know you're all going to hate this, but here's why I'm doing what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And what I don't get is why we're clinging to this guy, Clay Helton, who wasn't even considered a good hire at the time.
He's
certainly
interim,
not.
Yeah.
It's not like any other good schools would have wanted to hire Clay Helton as their head coach. And last year, with one of the best quarterbacks and rosters in the country, that should have been a time where USC is a clear playoff contender. And we were just non-competitive, got dominated at Notre Dame, got dominated by Ohio State. So we just clearly weren't near that upper echelon of teams.
No.
And then this year, still an extremely talented roster, and we're garbage, like really, really bad, 5-7. That really shouldn't happen. And I'm not saying that I want to take maybe a little bit of a step back, that it can't work with Clay Helton, you know, with some changes to the staff. That would be overconfident for me to say that it just couldn't work. But I think it's borderline egregious to think that Helton gives us a better chance of becoming a consistently good team than, say, a Matt Campbell or Neil Brown or Jeff Brohm or someone that's proven it with less talent. And then the final point, and this is probably the most important thing, is that the fan base is so against this guy that it's really going to make things toxic. Like it's going to be much more difficult to recruit. The whole vibe around the program is going to be negative all off season. The fans are probably not going to show up next year. They didn't show up this year. It was our lowest attendance since 1987. So you thought that would have sort of spurred a change. The boosters aren't happy. I don't see them donating a lot. It's not going to be easy to pull in a great coordinator when the coach is maybe a lame duck, although we'll talk about later. Maybe I'm wrong there. And the other thing is that it's not just Homer USC fans like me that are saying this. This is pretty much unanimous among, you know, national college football writers and people on message boards. And I go on RCFB and I see other Pac-12 fans saying, thank goodness they're keeping Clay Helton. So this is just all bad. I'm very unhappy.
Yeah, I don't get why. Like, what's the positive about keeping him? You already are not good. You had a horrible year, 5-7 for USC. That's terrible. And like you said, the worst thing is they're not recruiting very well right now. They're struggling this year. Last year was pretty good, but This year's not. Yeah, this year's not going so hot. Oregon's completely dominating the Pac-12 recruiting right now, and even Washington's doing really well too. They're ahead of USC, so you're not keeping up there. Nobody wanted to keep him. It just doesn't make sense to me. Like, he doesn't have a huge buyout. That's not it. No. So it's that just. I don't get it. I'm puzzled by it, and it's just. Yeah, I feel bad for you, Mike. It's. I mean.
Thank you. I'll be okay, but thank you.
I know, but like, why? I don't know. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, you're not crazy, Michael. I you see all these national columnists on Twitter, like, just like jaws to the table, shocked. Seeing that Twitter post, it's not just the average fan. So I think it's crazy too. I mean, do we want to talk about potential staff members?
Sure. Yeah. Bring up the rumor.
Well, there's a rumor. I know someone in the athletic department, and I've seen some
Ooh.
other mumblings on Twitter. This just into College Football Bros. Cliff Kingsbury has been spotted on the USC campus. I mean, he might just be visiting LA, but immediately after his firing, he was spotted on campus, and we know that you have to think.
Are they sure? Sorry to interrupt. Are they sure it wasn't Ryan Gosling?
That's fair.
Could it be? Okay.
But either way, I mean. You know, by keeping Helton you would think you would know that it would have to be a complete overhaul of the staff. I mean, if they don't do anything with the staff, then, oh my God, then just
they will. They will.
I know. But yeah, so that if they hired somebody like that, at least a big name coordinator, that could be somewhat exciting.
No, yeah, I would definitely be a lot more happy if we made a hire like Cliff Kingsbury, because that is one of our big problems, is that USC wasn't committed to winning in the sense of paying big time for coordinators. So if they ponied up for Cliff Kingsbury, then that I would be a lot more happy.
I'm sure you would, Michael. I'm sure you
would. Well, yeah, and I'd get a look at his beautiful face for the next year. That would be wonderful.
But I mean, yeah, T. Martin, a guy like that, he had to go. He hasn't been fired, but he needs to
go. He's at least got to get demoted.
You just got to get fired.
I mean, okay.
Demoting doesn't work.
All right. Well, that's enough about USC. Let's get to a few more coaching changes. We are going to assign one of these to each bro, and you have to say whether you agree with the decision to fire the coach, and then who are the likely candidates to replace him, or
if they already made a hire.
If they've already hired somebody. Yeah. So
I'll start off. Larry Fedora here at North Carolina. And do I think he deserved to get the boot? Yes, he definitely deserved to get the boot. He only won two ACC games in the last 2 years. And coincidentally, both of those were against Pitt, which is kind of interesting. But he had to go. But it's kind of weird who they ended up hiring here. They went back to the 90s, and 80s even. Mac Brown.
Yeah.
That's interesting. 67-year-old Mac Brown, just entering his prime in coaching.
Well, what do you think of it? You think it's a good hire?
I don't know, actually. I mean, because when I heard about, I don't know, I compare this to, maybe I shouldn't, but like a coach like I thought wasn't a good hire because he'd already done it and just wasn't that successful was like Jeff Tedford when Fresno hired him. Mm-hmm. I was like, that's not going to be, he didn't do it. He flamed out at Cal. How's that going to work? Killed it at Fresno. So I don't know. I mean, he's a name. He knows the importance of recruiting. So he's going to get, I'm sure he's going to have a good recruiting staff that goes with him. So I don't know. I'm kind of like it if I'm North Carolina.
Yeah. I like it too. There's talk of him bringing Gene Chizik with him. Well, there's also talk of him bringing Cliff Kingsbury. I think that would be tough given he's already a lock to go to USC.
Right, right.
Well, if it's Gene Chizik, then I'm not totally loving it.
Yeah, but I like you said, I think he's going to recruit well. I think the fans like him. I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it. Not a lot has worked at North Carolina, so I don't mind this outside the box move.
They're going to bring Frank Beamer there, maybe Bill Snyder, Bobby Bowden. Yeah.
There you go. Why not? Okay. Well, we already talked about him. Cliff Kingsbury, he, of course, was fired at Texas Tech, and I think it was the right move. He was there for 6 years, and they just could never get over the hump. They were always around 500. So if it hadn't happened yet, maybe it just wasn't going to happen. As far as who they should hire, I think they should hire Neil Brown from Troy or Seth Luttrell from North Texas, that if they can get them. They both have coached at Texas Tech before. I think they'd be home run hires for them. But the reports are they're not their top targets, which I think is crazy. But okay, so let's try to decide who they will hire. Some names that have been thrown out there. Dana Holgorsen. He used to coach there for 8 years under Mike Leach. What do you think, Ryan?
I don't know. Would he leave West Virginia for Texas Tech?
I wouldn't seem like he would. That seems like a weird move. But the only reason people think he might is that there's rumors of him butting heads with the administration at West Virginia. So maybe. Yeah. Brett Venables is friends with Kirby Hocutt. But he came out with a quote that he didn't exactly deny that. He didn't say, no, I'm not going there. But didn't really sound like he was interested. So
if he wasn't good, I mean, he could have got some other better gigs in the past. So probably not, I would think.
Jim Levitt, also friends with Hocutt, the athletic director. But the only problem with him, he has a player abuse scandal in the past, of course, at USF. So that doesn't seem like a great fit for Texas Tech. But
why, Mike?
Well, because allegedly Mike Leach may have had some issues with that. So so I don't know. But yeah. But apparently they're interested in him. So had to throw him out there. Mike Norvell of Memphis, Matt Wells, Utah State. There's a ton of names. You can throw out anybody. And I don't know how to predict. I really don't know who they're going to pick. Yeah. I'll just guess Jim Levitt, but I have no idea.
I think that'd be great if that was...
Yeah, you match up. Hopefully they can keep the great offense going, and now you bring in a guy who can help fix the defense. I'm okay with it. I'd be okay with it. I don't know if it's great, but I'd much rather have Neil Brown or Seth Luttrell.
Yeah, fair enough.
All right, I'm going to touch on Western Kentucky. They fired...
We gave you the exciting one.
That's right. Real sexy. Real sexy. They fired Mike Sanford. I agree with the decision. They finished 3-9. They were 6-7 last year. And he succeeded Jeff Brohm, who was 30-10 before him. So the program clearly took a step back. They have since agreed to terms with Tennessee offensive coordinator Tyson Helton, who was the younger brother of Clay at SC. But he was previously the Hilltoppers offensive coordinator under Brohm, so it kind of seems like a logical fit. He's not a huge hot name, but, you know, Western Kentucky, they kind of had to pick their battles there. So I think it's a solid fit. Go back to a previous regime that worked.
Okay. Yeah, I agree. Let's move on to, we do have another segment here, playoff scenarios. I'm excited about this. So each of us has come up with one scenario of how the games this weekend will play out. And then, so we'll say, if that happens, who will be the four teams in the playoff? So Trey, why don't you go first?
All right. So let's start with the most likely scenario. Assuming every game goes according to the point spread, Alabama beats Georgia, they're in. Clemson beats Pitt, and they're in. Notre Dame's already undefeated, they're in. So now it comes down to who gets in between 12-1 Ohio State and 12-1 Oklahoma. Now, one important note here is that we are recording this before the CFP rankings are released this week.
Okay, I'll answer this one. So I think, yeah, that is definitely a crucial point, because I think we might get our answer in these rankings. If Oklahoma is ahead of Ohio State, then it's going to be really tough for Ohio State to pass OU, of course, because OU has a tougher game against Texas rather than Ohio State against Northwestern. And I'm going to predict that Oklahoma would get in this scenario. It's very close between these two teams. Either way the committee goes, it wouldn't be unreasonable. But according to Massey Peabody, OU has a slightly better strength of schedule already than Ohio State. And then, of course, that gap's going to widen this weekend. So I think, and also I think their one loss is a much, you know, better loss, losing barely against Texas rather than getting killed at Purdue. So I think they would go with Oklahoma. Do you guys agree or...
Yeah, I agree with you. Even though Ohio State looked super impressive against Michigan, you can't just look at one game. And I think the committee is pretty good at not doing that. So, but like you said, Mike, it's going to be vital to see who's number four tomorrow night or Tuesday night. Cause that's
number five.
That's right. Number five. Yeah.
Georgia's going to be fourth, probably.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. My bad.
But either way.
Whoever is ahead, Oklahoma or Ohio State, that's crucial. Because whoever is ahead, I don't see them being able to get past, if assuming they win.
Well, OU would have a much better chance if OU was sixth. they'd have a much better chance if they had a convincing win against Texas.
Yeah. But if they put Ohio State ahead of them this week, I don't know. I don't see, you know, they'll still beat a top 20 Northwestern team in the Big Ten title game. It's not like it's a much better win than Texas. So
yeah, that's a good point. Maybe I'm overstating the difference between the two teams.
I'm going to disagree. I have to give it to Ohio State because they proved that their best is tough to beat, as they showed against Michigan, who the committee had as number four. I mean, they were a top team. True. And they showed a pulse on defense, and they obviously can move the ball well with Haskins and that offense. I personally think that Oklahoma's defense will be the reason the committee leaves them out, as they're not a complete team, whether that's fair or not. But I will say I agree with your points about, especially Ryan mentioning that Ohio State's overall resume has been, it was kind of weak until Michigan. So, like we've said, it's razor thin.
It is. It's super close because Oklahoma has a lot of unimpressive wins against Army. Doesn't look as bad now because Army had a good season, but
Oklahoma State,
you know, yeah,
given 40 up to Kansas.
Yeah. So either way, it's very close. Yep. Okay. What's our next scenario?
All right. So the next scenario is the scenario we got. Six teams are going to feel like they have a decent chance here. It's a kind of far-fetched one, I might add. It's a lot of craziness has to happen, but here's what's going to happen. Georgia beats Bama in a close one. Clemson loses to Pitt. OU beats Texas. And Ohio State beats Northwestern. So what you'd end up with is an undefeated Notre Dame and then 5 12-1 teams. So that's Georgia, Bama, Clemson, OU, and Ohio State. So which two of those five do you think would get left out?
So in this scenario, I'm going to leave Oklahoma and Ohio State out. To me, it would come down to Ohio State and Clemson for that last spot, in my opinion. And I think similar to last season where Ohio State got blown out to Iowa, then this year they had the blowout loss to Purdue, then they've obviously had a shaky defense throughout the year. I mean, I think that would keep them out against Clemson. Now, I will say, though, that Clemson's schedule, looking back in hindsight, it was fairly blah, but they're just so strong on offense and defense that I think that would put them in over Ohio State. So I think Oklahoma and Ohio State are the ones left out there.
Yeah, you definitely identified the teams. Georgia would be in, no doubt, right? Notre Dame,
would be in, obviously. They're
undefeated. And that third, I would agree, Trey, you, I guess, took it as a given, which maybe is right. I think Alabama's still in. I think even if they lose, they're clearly the best team. So even if their resume is, their resume, they killed everybody. So even if there wasn't an amazing strength of schedule, I don't think that matters. And then, it's down to Clemson, OU, and Ohio State. I agree. I think Clemson, sort of for similar reasons to Alabama, they just are one of the four best teams. Even if they have a weird game against Pitt and lose, they're still one of the four best teams.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree with you guys here. But the interesting thing is, in this scenario, that would mean only two Power Five conferences would make the playoff. SEC and ACC.
But then you got the independent Notre Dame. But that's true. Yeah.
And only one Power Five conference champion would be in, just Georgia.
That's kind of odd.
And I think that would upset people, but the committee has never said that a conference championship is the be all end all. They've said the opposite. It's a factor, you know, it's a plus. So just because OU and Ohio State had that doesn't mean their resume is better than Clemson.
Yeah, so what, you think you want Washington to make it, or Utah, or Pitt?
Well, so that's my point about that. Everyone saying, it should be all the five or six conference champs and then two at-larges. Well, does Washington or Utah really like deserve to be in a 6 or 8 team playoff? Like, no, they don't. Pitt. I mean,
that would be one of the downsides.
That's a different story for another day.
Okay, last scenario here. It's a fun one. I'm trying to get UCF into the playoff, so let's assume all these things happen, and you got to tell me, is there at least a reasonable chance or any chance that UCF gets in? So I'm assuming that Notre Dame can obviously not be caught by UCF, and I think the same goes for Clemson and Alabama, even if they lose. So let's assume those three teams are in. So I'm trying to get UCF that fourth spot. So let's assume Oklahoma gets killed by Texas, Ohio State gets killed by Northwestern, Georgia gets killed by Alabama. And then the last spot would be down to these five teams. It'd be two-loss Ohio State, two-loss Oklahoma, two-loss Georgia, and then two-loss Michigan, and then, of course, UCF. So, Ryan, is UCF in?
No. Sorry.
Dang.
I wish they would give them a chance, but, I mean, it just it kind of makes you wonder if they would be affected by the injury to Mackenzie Milton, the committee, you know, I mean.
Yeah, totally.
I don't know. Maybe they would.
I think they would. They're in their selection protocol. It says they're allowed to consider key injuries that could affect their performance in the playoff.
Which is kind of a little unfair, but that's just what it is, I guess. So it absolutely would. So if a healthy Mackenzie was there, I still don't think they'd make it.
I think they'd have a chance. I think they'd have a chance with a healthy Mackenzie.
I think if Mackenzie Milton was there and they win, they beat Memphis in style, and they I think they could have snuck in. But
they have
in
no
this,
quality wins. None of the teams
I don't care
are currently in the top 25.
Listen, I'm not disagreeing with that, but then you've got they have style points, and then also
and the Pitt win, the domination, that's not terrible, you know. There's it would be the same argument on a much less of a scale as
don't
Alabama.
Say Bama.
Yeah, has because they didn't have a great strength schedule, but they killed everybody. Obviously, Bama's schedule is a ton tougher than UCF, but you get
UCF
the point.
Had some close games.
That's true. Memphis and Navy.
But in that scenario that you mentioned, I'm leaning Georgia.
Yeah, I would say Georgia too.
Because they're not expected to beat Alabama, and they all have quality wins, and their only quote unquote bad loss is on the road at LSU, and then then Alabama. So, but I think if Mackenzie Milton was there, this was the chance. But obviously, a lot would have had to play out. So,
all right. That's it for the playoff scenarios. Let's preview championship week. We'll start with the Pac-12 championship on Friday night in Santa Clara. Washington is a 5-point favorite against Utah. Trey, what are you thinking here?
It's pretty amazing that as lethargic as Washington has been this year, they're favored to go to the Rose Bowl. I'm even more impressed, though, with Kyle Whittingham. It's like they didn't even lose their starting quarterback and running back. In the matchup, these teams, they're pretty even on offense and defense statistically. They both have great coaches. If there is an edge, it's the big game experience for UW. But I haven't been overly impressed with them here, and I like the Utes in this one.
Okay, I actually like Washington. To me, I was a little bit surprised by that point spread. I thought it would be higher. I think this is maybe closer to a point spread I would expect if Tyler Huntley was still healthy. And, you know, Jason Shelley has played pretty well, like you said. Whittingham continues to win without Tyler Huntley, but he's faced some pretty bad defenses. This is the first great secondary he's going to go up against, so I think we'll see the freshman mistakes show up in this game, and that's why I'm taking the Huskies.
You know, I haven't been the biggest Washington Husky backer the last couple of years, but I agree with Michael here. I know that Shelley has played pretty well, especially the last few games. They've put up at least 30 points in all three of those games, but not against the greatest competition. Washington's a different animal on defense, and with their ground game improving and then Miles Gaskin, I don't think Utah's gonna be able to keep up. But we didn't mention the regular season game between these two teams. Washington went to Salt Lake and won 21-7, and they didn't play well at all. And I think Browning gifted them that 7 points, if I'm not mistaken. So, I don't know.
I do remember a Utah guy running for the end zone and somehow
he fumbled it
ball.
Out of bounds or something.
Somehow didn't score. Yeah. Would have been a little closer. But
so, you know, I like Washington here as well.
Okay, next up is the Big 12 championship. Texas against Oklahoma in a rematch of the Red River. Dang it. That's hard to say as well.
Yep.
Yeah, it is.
You can't do it.
Red River rivalry from earlier in the season. Oklahoma's a 7.5-point favorite in Jerry World. Who do you like here, Ryan?
I like Texas. I'm a little surprised OU is favored by more than a touchdown right now. Maybe that'll go down as the week goes on, but I don't know. Their defense is clearly horrible, and I highly doubt they'll get two defensive touchdowns like they did last week against West Virginia to help them. Plus, Texas has already beaten them. You know, they beat them in the Red River rivalry, And it's not like either team has really improved or decreased at a significant amount since then. I still feel like they're relatively the same teams. So I'm going to take Texas, and I'm going to make them my lock of the week.
Yeah, I think I agree with you there. I think Oklahoma will win. I definitely like them to win the game straight up, but I think Sam Ellinger can keep them close. He had a terrible game last week, finally ended that interceptionless streak, and it was against Kansas. And there's been some talk that his shoulder is still not 100%, but that injury was, I think, over a month ago or around there. So, and he's been fine since then. So I'm not worried about that. And OU's defense has just been so bad that I think the key against them is just don't turn the ball over. You're going to, I think I said this earlier, you're going to move the ball down the field and score as long as you don't turn it over. And Texas this year has only turned it over 10 times. That's second best among Power 5 teams. So I like their chances to take care of the ball and hang in there for the cover.
Is Bama number one?
Number one was, shoot, I should have written it down. Arizona State. That was it.
Wow. Yeah, Manny Wilkins, he doesn't throw interceptions. That's a good one.
Yeah.
You know, so when looking at this game, Texas, their advantage is their defense. But that's really slipped over the course of the year. Since the game they played against Oklahoma in the Red River rivalry.
Not bad.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of a hiccup in there.
Yeah, but there's a little W in there a little bit.
I got away with it. But since that game, they've given up 38, 42, and 34, losing two of those games. So, you know,
it's
obviously
the Big 12.
I know, and I don't trust Oklahoma's defense, but I think they have revenge, and they're looking to make a statement, and I think they're going to handle, not blow out the Longhorns, but I think they cover.
Okay, biggest game maybe of the weekend, the SEC Championship. Alabama takes on Georgia in Atlanta, and the Tide are a 13-point favorite. And I've been picking Alabama pretty much all season against the spread, but I think I'm finally going to pick against them. Georgia is not completely overmatched talent-wise in this game, not at all. They've been recruiting nearly as well as Alabama for the past few years. And unlike LSU and Mississippi State, who were two of the only teams to at least compete decently defensively against Alabama, Georgia actually has a really good offense to pair with their defense. So, and Georgia's resume, if you look at it right now, it's really good. I know that loss at LSU is kind of sticks out like a sore thumb, but every one of their wins has come by at least two touchdowns. So I have to take 13 points with a team that good.
I agree with all your points there. And I think Georgia honestly is peaking at this point, which is a plus. But the only problem is that Bama, in order for Georgia to win, obviously Bama's going to have to play their B or maybe even C game to lose straight up. Fromm seems to have rebounded from his kind of mid-season down form that people were ragging him on. They obviously have revenge on their mind as they return to the same building of the national title from last year. The problem is they just don't have a guy like Roquan Smith on defense that they had last year. And obviously the Bama team this year has a better offense than last. So I see Bama winning, but I'm with you, Michael. I think Georgia covers.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you guys. Ever since that LSU loss that you mentioned, Georgia's been playing great. Holyfield and Swift have been awesome, and Fromm has been efficient as ever. And the ground game. I mean, I know Bama's defense is really, really good, but it's been a little susceptible to giving up some runs at times this year. And I feel like a team like Georgia has the capability of at least maybe exposing that a little bit more than other teams have. And their defense has responded well. In their last three SEC games, they've given up less than 15 points per game. So I don't think they're going to pull off the upset, but I do think they're going to cover.
Okay, before we move on, I got a question for you guys. So in the playoff rankings that we haven't seen yet, Georgia's obviously going to be number four. And they're going to be, I think, of course, they don't give ratings, they just give rankings. But I think they're going to be clearly ahead of Oklahoma and Ohio State in some order, right? Like Georgia's a clear number four.
Yeah.
So yeah. If they lose by three against Alabama or they lose in overtime, whatever.
Yeah.
Why should anybody pass them?
Aren't they
then just getting punished for playing a good team, for playing the best team?
I don't disagree. And I mean, I think the committee's not afraid to make a statement, but I think even the committee would be afraid to make a statement like that.
I I can definitely see a scenario where if they lose a super close game and then neither OU or Ohio State really plays that well, I can definitely see them being in the playoff, because I honestly think they would deserve it. And
I think they're better than
Ohio
State and Oklahoma.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, if I was the committee, I would put them in if that was the case. There's a good scenario.
That is a crazy scenario. I think just assuming that either Ohio State or Oklahoma would get in, but I think we should consider more if it's a super close game.
Yeah.
That it's not necessarily a given.
Yeah, against by far the best team in the nation, they're competed when nobody else could. It's got to count for something.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it would be one of the best performances all year if they hung in there with Alabama.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay. So let's move on to the ACC championship game. Clemson is a 26.5-point favorite.
Real tight game. Real tight matchup.
Yeah, against Pitt in Charlotte. What do you think here, Trey?
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy for Pitt to make it here, but what a joke of a conference title game. ACC was just, they were bad this year, and now you have a 26-point spread game. I mean, if I told you a few weeks ago, or you know, before the season, that you could watch the ACC title, the Big Ten title, or the Mountain West title, since they're all on at the same time, you'd easily have said the ACC or Big Ten. But honestly, I'm probably more interested in the Mountain West game. But yeah. But that's for later. All I'm looking for here is to see if Clemson is sharp and if they have a legitimate shot to beat an Alabama in the playoff. You know, giving up 35 last week might have been an anomaly, but if Pitt is able to march all over Clemson's D, then I might get a little worried. Personally, I don't think that's going to happen. I think that game last week makes them even more focused, and I think they clobber Pitt and they make a statement.
Yeah, I agree with you here, Trey. I like Clemson. Pitt's coming off a really poor performance last week against Miami. They lost 24-3, and they're facing a much better team here. I think Clemson's defense is going to turn it up a notch this week after obviously not playing great. But Pitt doesn't have a quarterback like Jake Bentley, and neither a receiver like Deebo Samuel, who had a huge game last week against the Tigers. So I don't think Pitt can expose Clemson through the air like that. So I'm going to take the Clemson minus the points.
Okay, I'm going to go the opposite. I'm going to go Pitt. I know you mentioned they laid an egg against Miami last week. And let's not make any more egg jokes, though. but they really didn't have much to play for in that game. They already had the division wrapped up. And I don't know. I guess you're always maybe get pumped up to play at Miami, but it really wasn't an important game. And in this game, I think they'll slow the game down. They're, of course, going to run the ball a ton, Kadri Allison and Darren Hall. So with limited possessions and kind of the fact that Clemson doesn't need to impress anyone. If they build a lead, they can just sit on it. They can rest their starters. There's no reason for them to, I guess they don't really need to rest them, but just prevent them from,
getting injured
in that second half. So they're already locked into that number two seed if they win this game. So I think Pitt can get the cover. Next game is the Big Ten Championship, Northwestern against Ohio State in Indianapolis. And Ohio State's a 14-point favorite. What do you think here, Ryan?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this before, but Northwestern just seems to always play to the level of their competition. And, you know, I think they're going to do it again here. But I think they'll just run out of steam at the end of the game. You know, it's crazy, though. Dwayne Haskins has thrown 28 more touchdowns than Clayton Thorson.
That's unbelievable.
28. That's crazy. And he's almost 1,500 more yards through the air as well. So, I don't know. Even though those statistics are crazy, but I'm still going to take Northwestern. I think they find a way to make it ugly. Maybe they just find ways to keep games interesting and close. And I think they're going to do it again here.
Yeah.
Why not?
I think they haven't won a game by more than 2 touchdowns. Or lost a game by more than 2 touchdowns this year.
That sounds about right. I
think I read that somewhere.
Yeah, yeah, no, it is. This game is really weird to me. I mean, after the poor performance that the Buckeyes had last week, it almost, to me, Ryan, you obviously went the other way, but it feels almost too obvious that they'd whip Northwestern. But I'm, you know, maybe it's going to be hard emotionally to go from their rival Michigan, where they're all in, to, you know, a Northwestern team where they're expected to win. But I'm buying into the Buckeyes right now. They have too many athletes for Northwestern. And this Buckeyes team could potentially resemble the national title team they had a few years ago, where they peaked at the very end of the year. I'm not saying they're going to win it all this time, but they have a chance after this. And it's really hard for me to pick a team that lost to Duke and Akron in the Big Ten title. So I say Ohio State rolls, and they're going to actually be my lock of the week.
For me, I'm going to slightly disagree in that I don't think one game is enough for me to go back to trusting Ohio State. I think there were too many struggles throughout the year to think that everything is suddenly solved. But I guess I do agree that I'm going to take Ohio State, because I just don't think Northwestern's any good. They're not even in Massey Peabody's top 35 teams, and they've only put up more than 31 points twice this year, and that was against a terrible Nebraska defense and Akron. So in a game where we know Ohio State's going to score a bunch, I mean, they ran all over, or didn't run all over, they threw all over Michigan last week, one of the best defenses in the country. So I just don't think Northwestern can keep up with that. But let's move on to the Group of Five conference championships, and we'll start with the AAC. Memphis is at UCF, and the Knights are a 3.5-point favorite. And before I say what I think is going to happen in this game, I have another question for you guys. And it is, does this game matter for the New Year's Six, or does UCF already have that locked up?
Yeah, I think they already have it locked up. I mean, Boise and Fresno are the only teams with a sliver of a chance if one of them, you know, wins big in that title game. And UCF would have to get destroyed. But I don't know. They're going to have one less loss no matter who it is. So, and they're pretty far ahead in the rankings.
Hey, what about UAB? Oh, no, wait. UAB lost again. So
they got three losses. It's only Fresno and Boise that have a shot.
If UCF loses by 1 point, I think the winner of Fresno-Boise is going to be the team because of that Mackenzie Milton factor. That's what I think. Maybe I could be wrong.
Michael, you're the deciding factor here.
Well, I'm just looking up how many losses UAB has, Ryan.
They have three.
They do have three losses. Dang, yeah, that's right. Oh, yeah, the A&M game. That's right. Okay. Mm. All right. I'm dumb.
I told you, dude.
Not that they would have had a chance anyway.
You don't believe me?
I know. You told me. You were right. Well, I'm sorry. Were you guys saying something? Am I supposed to break a tie here?
Yeah. Would UCF make it?
I think it's possible. I think I kind of more agree with Ryan's side of it, where I think likely UCF has it locked up even if they lose. But if it's by a decent margin they lose, and then if Boise or Fresno wins by a decent margin, I do think there's a chance that one of those teams could get in.
Yeah.
But in this game, I do like Memphis to beat UCF. They almost beat UCF earlier in the year with a healthy Mackenzie Milton. So with a freshman quarterback now, Dariel Mack for UCF, who didn't look great against USF last week through the air. And I think Brady White is by far the better quarterback in this game. So I'll take the points, and I'm going to make that my lock of the week.
Wow. All right. Yeah, I'm with you, Mike. I like Memphis here. They've been playing great the last 4 weeks. They've won four in a row, and they destroyed Houston last week without De'Aaron King. And I think they're going to have a similar result with UCF and no Mackenzie Milton. So I'm taking Memphis also.
Yeah, I like Memphis. They get revenge for the game earlier this year and the conference title overtime game last season.
Ooh, yeah.
Okay, Mountain West now, Fresno State at Boise State.
They Broncos should have played this one in Fresno to pay back for what they did last year.
I know. It's really not fair. But Boise's a 2.5-point favorite. What do you think, Trey?
I love this game. I know it's a home game, and I know Boise beat Fresno State a few weeks ago, but Fresno was up 17-3 in that one, and they missed two field goals. So they're not afraid of Boise. Their defense has given up only 13 points per game, while Marcus McMarion, their quarterback, easy for me to say, has had a 24-3 touchdown-to-interception ratio this season. The one advantage, though, Boise does have is they have a little better running attack, especially with running back Alexander Mattison. He's been picking it up late. He's rushed for over 1,200 yards, 16 scores. That being said, I like this Fresno team. I think they're going to slow down Boise enough to get the win.
I disagree. I think what Boise did last week against Utah State was really impressive. I think Utah State is just as good as Fresno, and we saw, you know, what happened last week to them at Boise. Pretty much Boise just has to win to cover this spread, and they're at home on the Smurf turf. I can't pick against them again, even though I think I did that last week. I regretted it.
Yeah, I'm going to go with what Trey said here. I mean, Fresno almost had that game wrapped up last time they were playing up in the blue turf, and I don't know. I feel like Fresno's due. They're due to beat Boise right now.
They're going to do it. Due is always a good argument.
I know, right? We're due, baby.
Conference USA, UAB at Middle Tennessee, a rematch, the rematch everyone wants after a 27-3 game.
Yeah.
Blue Raiders are favored by 2.5.
It's kind of weird. They won by 24 a week ago, and same place, same teams, but now they're only favored 2.5.
Well, this is great, because it's usually when I'm trying to argue not to overreact to a game, I'll say something like, now, if this game were played again next week, the spread would not be Middle Tennessee by 20.
Yeah,
you know, and now we have proof of it here. You know, it's just one game doesn't listen. Are you listening, Michigan fans? Just because you got blown out doesn't mean you're a lot worse than Ohio State.
Having said that, I like Middle Tennessee in this one because of that game. And they held UAB to less than 100 yards of total offense in that game. And UAB...
-1 yards rushing.
Yeah, -1 yards rushing. Neither UAB QB could get anything going. And I don't know. I just don't think in a matter of a week you can all of a sudden turn it around and improve that much or change the outcome of the game that much. So I like Brent Stock still. I think he's a great quarterback. And I think the Blue Raiders will take this one.
Yeah, I mean, I want to be contrarian and really think, you know, take the 2.5 with UAB just because of their performance last week. But when I look at a game like this, I do like to look at the quarterback play, and I do think Stockstill is superior. And they've been on a roll towards the end of the year, so I like Middle Tennessee as well.
One thing that I didn't watch the UAB Middle Tennessee game last week, but I wonder if UAB was vanilla or just not motivated because they were already in. And maybe they didn't want to show a lot.
They weren't for sure in, were they?
No, they were. They were. I'm pretty sure they were already in.
Hmm.
You can look it up, but I'm pretty sure UAB had it locked up. Middle Tennessee, there was an FIU game earlier. FIU lost.
Oh, yeah. You're right.
Which I think gave Middle Tennessee a chance. So
you're right. No. Okay. You're right.
Anyway, Spencer Brown, UAB's top running back, he only had one carry last week because he is dealing with an injury, I guess. He's questionable for this game. That is a huge loss for them. He's had a great season if he doesn't play. And then their quarterback, AJ Erdely, did not look good in his first game back from injury last week. Needless to say, he got sacked 8 times. So I do like Middle Tennessee. Moving on to the Sun Belt, Louisiana.
Lafayette.
According to Ryan, Louisiana Lafayette is taking on Appalachian State, and it's at Appalachian State. The Mountaineers are favored 17.5. And I really like this Louisiana team as far as looking forward into the future, which is usually how I like to look to the future forward. first year head coach Billy Napier is doing a great job on the recruiting trail. They're first in the Sun Belt in recruiting, which is really impressive. For Louisiana Lafayette, Louisiana. I'm going to call him Louisiana. And he's done a great job on the field too this year. They're a ton better than last year. And when you go 7-5, when your schedule has at Mississippi State, at Alabama, at App State, at Troy, that's a really good year. But on the other side, App State, their only losses were at Penn State in overtime and then at Georgia Southern in a game where their quarterback, Zach Thomas, was injured for most of it. So like Louisiana in the future, but I'll take App State now.
All right, I'm going to disagree with you. I'm going to go with the Raging Cajuns of Louisiana Lafayette here. From a bettor's perspective, you got to like 17.5 points. That's pretty nice to get that.
It's a nice hook there.
Yeah, right. But also, I like their senior quarterback. They got a good experienced guy back there in Andre Nunez. So I don't know. I think they'll be able to keep this one within that 17.5.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like laying this many points in a title game, but I like the Mountaineers. I've just liked their team. They've been solid all year, and I think they're the class of this conference.
Okay, last conference championship we have is the MAC, and it is on Friday, so maybe it's really kind of the first conference championship game, but it's Buffalo.
That one in the Pac-12, right?
Them in the Pac-12, yeah. I don't know what times they're at, but I assume this one
Mac's,
is before.
MAC's like an hour before, yeah.
Okay. Buffalo's a 3.5-point favorite at Northern, or no, it's not at Northern Illinois. It's at Ford Field. And Trey, you're the Maction guy, so why don't you go first?
I know, I do like, I love the Mac, but Buffalo clearly has the advantage on offense. As Northern Illinois, they average less than 20 points per game. That's hard in today's college football, especially for if you're a good team.
Yeah.
Northern Illinois, they obviously own the defensive edge, but it's not as large of a gap as the two offenses have. And outside of their game at Ohio, where they ran into a complete buzzsaw, Buffalo dominated every other MAC opponent. And Northern Illinois comes into this one losing two in a row. So I'm predicting that Lance Leopold caps off a great year and the Bulls win the MAC.
Yeah, to your point, Trey, about that Northern Illinois offense, 5 yards per pass attempt on the year. That's 127th in the nation.
Wow.
And I'm just kind of thinking right now, I'm not exactly sure what Oklahoma's yards per pass attempt is, but it's definitely more than double that. I think it's probably around 13.
That's crazy.
But so really bad season from Marcus Childers through the air. And yeah, like you said, I know they've got a great defense, but Anthony Johnson at receiver, Tyree Jackson at quarterback, I think Buffalo will put enough points to cover.
Yeah, I like Buffalo as well. And I know Northern Illinois has a good defense, but I mean, if you look at the yards given up by both teams, Northern Illinois has allowed 344 yards per game. Buffalo has allowed 344.9. So it's pretty much the exact same. Whereas Northern Illinois, they run the ball a lot. They shorten the game. So is Northern Illinois' defense really that much better? I don't particularly see it. So I like Buffalo here.
Okay, that does it for our championship week preview. And it is time, as always, for the questionable finish. With it being championship week, name a time when you won a championship or something big.
Fair enough. All right, I'll go first. Well, I guess it's not maybe huge, but as a high school basketball coach, I did win conference championships in back-to-back years.
Nice. Yeah,
my first 2 years, thank you. Not bad.
I also had a back-to-back accomplishment, back-to-back spelling bee champ in elementary school.
Nerd.
Yeah, they actually had to stop having them. They just knew I would win. Everyone was wondering, is Michael Newman bad for the spelling bee? Is Alabama bad for college football? It was a similar type question.
Mine is, I did so many accomplishments on the field. I'm going to take one off the field. I'm going to say I won an NFL pick'em league against all my good friends. It's great for bragging rights, and it was a blast to win that.
That's weak.
How many friends did you have there?
Two. No,
it was me and you.
Yeah,
it was me and you, right?
Yeah.
I wouldn't call us friends. More kind of,
yeah,
forced. Yeah.
Yeah.
So when asked whether he'd be interested in returning to Texas Tech, Mike Leach said, "They didn't pay me last time, and I'm happy here. They haven't paid me for 2009, and we won 9 games that year, and they haven't won 9 games since." So what's something one of the bros did to you years ago that you're still bitter about?
So it's not one of the bros. It's both the bros.
Mm.
You little twerps have hole-in-ones, and I'm not bitter or anything, but I'm maybe just a little bitter.
Yep.
Fair. I am bitter that it seems like every time one of you guys moves, I have to help you move, but I don't remember either of you ever helping me move.
Oh, I helped you move from
when?
Dorm rooms at USC.
Dorm rooms?
Yeah, or apartments, I mean.
Oh, okay. I don't remember it, though, so it doesn't count.
You had a pod or whatever? Oh, yeah, I remember.
Okay, fair enough. Sorry.
Otherwise, I never would have gone to your place.
True.
I think I helped you move twice.
All right. Well, I don't remember. It wasn't memorable to me.
Very
you must
appreciative.
Done a bad job.
Yeah. All right. Mine is, I'm bitter that both of you guys got the height in the family. Michael more so than any of us. But, you know, Trey's a good, maybe almost 5'11", and Michael's, what are you, like 6'3" almost?
Yeah, 6'6", 6'7".
Oh, my.
Give or take.
Yeah. It's like Michael Beasley, right? You're listed.
Yeah, exactly.
Like 4 inches higher.
Okay, last one. Time for our upset special. And there's not a lot of games to choose from this week, so you can just take any underdog. Doesn't have to be 7+ points. I'm taking Memphis to win outright at UCF. That was my lock of the week. And no Mackenzie Milton. Simple as that.
So I hit mine last week. I had Baylor. They beat Texas Tech. I'm going to take, in this week, I'm going to take Utah. I think they're better than UW. I'm not in love with the Huskies, and I think their win against Wazoo last week was more because of weather and matchup as opposed to them being superior.
All right. I am going to take Fresno. I mentioned it earlier, but I think they're going to go up to Boise and steal one there. So give me the Bulldogs.
Okay. Before we close out the show, I want to mention the teams that reached bowl games this weekend that we didn't bring up. Baylor, Purdue, Vandy, Wake Forest, TCU, and Minnesota all got their sixth win.
Minnesota was impressive at Wisconsin.
And Wisconsin, 7-5.
Yeah, that was a very, very disappointing year.
Crazy. And then another final note, if the playoff rankings are up in the air after Saturday's games, we might do a quick episode just giving our preview of what the committee might do and who should be in. So, but if it's fairly obvious who the four teams should be, then I don't think we will. Does that sound good to you guys?
Yeah, that sounds reasonable.
And we kind of already gave our thoughts on Oklahoma versus Ohio State. So,
yeah, exactly. Yeah,
we'll see.
But yeah, we'll see.
All right. Play it by ear. Make sure you're subscribed. If you're listening to this and you're not subscribed, what's wrong with you?
Wow, Mike. Way to attack our listeners here.
Well, sorry. I'm sorry.
And guys,
that was rude.
Soak it in. This is the last kind of Saturday slate we have of
That's
the season.
True.
It's not a full slate, but it's some big games, and this is all we got. We just got bowls after this. Well, Army-Navy, but some bowls after this. So,
yeah. Oh, Stanford-Cal this weekend, too. Didn't bring that up.
That's true. The big game.
And Virginia Tech is playing Marshall there. I think Virginia Tech needs it to get to a bowl game. So
they do. They're 5-6.
Yeah, big game
Drake
for them.
Is playing Iowa State.
Drake, Iowa State?
Yeah.
Hate the Drake.
Yeah.
I hate the Drake.
Hate the Drake. Okay, well, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
You've been listening to the College Football Bros. If you have any questions for the next podcast, email them to collegefootballbros@gmail.com. To keep up with the brothers on social media, like them on Facebook at College Football Bros, follow them on Instagram at College Football Bros, and for their commentary on Saturdays, follow them on Twitter at CFB Bros. Thanks for listening.